Good morning. You're listening to Green Zine here at WFVR-LP South Royalton. Henry Swayze in the studio with me, Todd Tyson. We'll be right with you in just a couple of minutes. Thanks for listening. Guitar piece there from Ed Gerhard, a much younger Ed Gerhard. I don't know when this photo was taken, but I had a chance to present Ed Gerhard in Pennsylvania, probably in the late 90s. This CD, courtesy of Carl. We have the Carl Newman collection going here, hundreds of CDs that he has donated to the station. And this one says, "For Carl, thanks for everything," signed by Ed Gerhard. That was called Duet. You're tuned to Green Zine with Todd Tyson and Henry Swayze. I'm going to bring Henry up in just a moment, but let's acknowledge our underwriters here, and they include Soliflect, Bail, Building a Local Economy, and they are sponsoring and getting really behind a great event coming up on Saturday, as well as this radio station sponsoring Fletch Fest right up the road on Bicknell Hill Road in Henry's and my hometown of Tunbridge. FletchFest.com will get you to all the information. They open the gates at 11 a.m., and the event goes until midnight. All the details on Saturday the 23rd. We'll have our bike ride before that. So thanks to Bale for helping out with that. Also, Tom Wells, Daniel Leibowitz, the Upper Pass Beer Company, who also are helping out with our bike ride, the Pedal Power to the People, First Branch Coffee Company, Solar Fest, which just wrapped up a couple weekends ago, Wit and Grit, and the Yes We Can Collective. We've got some construction going outside, but we've got the windows open, Henry, because I didn't want to run the air conditioning today.
It's a perfect day not to be air conditioning.
Yeah, we talked actually, I think, last week, and there were some reports about how much energy global air conditioning, I think actually it was on Radio Eco Shock, and how China and India are really ramping up air conditioning. Of course, we rank number one on number of kilowatts used for air conditioning in the world.
Yes, and we don't have any great claim to fame why she should be like that, except for we use a lot of power.
We do use a lot of power. And we're once we go to Bird Note, I'm going to close the window because I think the guy is literally right outside the window with his screw gun. Yeah. But what have you been up to, Henry?
Oh, I've been at my house, came yesterday, and doing repair jobs and things I usually do when I'm down here. I noticed that it's very, very dry in Burlington still. Rivers are way, way down, and lawns burning up. But I have a pretty good slot carved in my last hill of my driveway where it must have been a heavy downpour at some point that we didn't have in Burlington.
Yeah, there. It's interesting how isolated some of these rains. There was a rain several days ago where it was just a sprinkle, and then a couple hills over, literally 2 miles away, they got 2 inches of rain in about 20 minutes, something like that.
That looks like what happened to my driveway.
Yeah, and that was your place.
And it was interesting because further down on the driveway, there was no washing. So it seems like it was like in a 100-yard zone or something.
Wow. Well, fortunately, we are, one thing, we do want it to kind of be dry for Saturday. A lot of outdoor events scheduled. But then there's some rain moving in, hopefully on Sunday and Monday, which could add up to a half an inch. But we'll take whatever we can get.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who will we be talking to? I think a returning guest been with us a few times.
Yes, Ben Walsh. He's with the Vermont Public Interest Research Group, and he's their energy person. And I turned to him. We were scheduled to do to look at ground source heat pumps.
Right.
And their schedule got jammed up with law school. There's two law school students that have been working on that, and their schedule got jammed up, and so they're down the road. Be another another week, maybe
so
next
that,
week,
that
maybe the week after.
That explains your note about, hey, the guests that might come in are going to join you in the studio.
Yes.
And but the context on that, there was no mention of heat pumps in there, but I just figured, oh, well, if they wander in, we'll just start talking.
We'll talk. Well, you probably missed the previous note that went with that.
Yeah, get way too many emails. I have to figure out the whole filter thing. Yeah. Well, that'll be good. So that's a future discussion. Yeah, the law school, by the way, I mean, speaking of the environment, we do have one of the top-rated environmental law schools in the country here at VLGS. And in fact, they're working outside our studio right now, helping us out. But they have their opening day of classes this coming Monday. A lot of new faces on campus. The 1Ls are checking stuff out. And great to be able to broadcast from a space that they give us a very reasonable rental rate on.
So going back to heat pumps, et cetera. So if you do air conditioning, if you call that... I don't know what we'll do. We'll do it the other way around.
All right.
If we do ground source heat pumps instead of window air conditioning, if that takes one unit of energy per unit of cooling, then if you do air to air heat pumps, you're looking at about 2 units of energy per unit of cooling or heating.
Okay.
And if you go to window air conditioning for the cooling part of it, you're up around 4 times the energy usage. So so as we move to heat pumps, my partner in Burlington is very heat sensitive, has heart condition, and has to be in a cool house. And she had window air conditionings, and she went to heat pumps, and it cut her power bill in half.
I was going to say that the air source heat pumps, that is 50%, and to get to the dollars and cents, which seems to sometimes drive some people more than the environmental consequences of their activities. But if they know they're going to save money by doing something that's green, they get a lot more interested. And then, of course, we know that the installation of the ground source heat pumps is a lot more expensive venture and probably needs to be a collaborative effort with a lot of people in the same area.
Yes, indeed. And just one comment on if you do have heat pumps or whatever, make sure you have a diligent contractor. The gases that are being used in all that air conditioning are several thousand times the heat trapping capacity of CO2.
Yeah, the HCFCs.
Yeah, so they're nasties, and good contractor will be very careful about not wasting or letting any of those escape into the atmosphere.
So they, just to clarify to me, even with a heat pump, those chemicals are still necessary.
Yes, they are. There is the heat pumps that are for hot water. They are driven by CO. The CO2 is the coolant gas in them. So they are a one-way heat pump. They're not for cooling. They're only for heating. And they're much more efficient, yet again, than a air source heat pump.
All right. Well, we're going to move the needle one way or another. Hey, how about if we check in with this very talkative duck that I'm looking at on the screen here?
Yes, it's a mallard, and it's titled Mallards Disappear. Males do, anyway.
All right. Well, let's check in. This is our weekly installment of Bird Note, and you are listening to Green Zine here on Royalton Community Radio.
This is Bird Note. Ah, mallards at your local pond. They're our largest dabbling duck, and among ducks, the most abundant species. They're the source of all domestic ducks, except the Muscovy. There's a female making herself heard. But does it seem that all the brightly colored male mallards have disappeared? By now, the male duck's need for fancy feathers to attract the females has passed. The male mallards have molted, dropping their bright green, reddish, black, and white feathers and replacing them with mottled brown ones. Changing into more subdued colors for the months of summer helps camouflage the male ducks, protecting them from predators. Come fall, the mallards will molt again and return to the colorful dandies we remember. In the meantime, while all the mallards look like brownish females, there's one way to distinguish males from females. Look closely at the bill. The male's bill is dull yellow, while the female's is orange marked with black. And watch to see which duck is quacking. That's the female mallard. Male mallards make a more subdued and raspy call, mostly when courting or greeting, or when they feel threatened. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
That was some good information there, particularly at the end. I didn't know about that difference in quacking.
Well, you know, I've been looking at mallards on a regular basis on Lake Champlain and on the rivers, and the males seem to get very scarce, and I must say that I wasn't aware that that was because they lost so much of their plumage and were no longer brightly colored. I feel pretty stupid about that. And if you appreciate Bird Note, they're being funded by government money that is no more. So if you feel like supporting them, that's a great thing to do.
Indeed. Hey, speaking of support, I've turned to the Substack that a future guest, possibly even next week, a returning guest, the most well-known environmentalist in the state of Vermont and maybe even right up there globally, and that's Bill McKibben. He puts out a Substack. I'm currently getting the free version, and my partner pointed out to me his most recent one, and it's called Trump is Shockingly Dumb About Electric Power. He goes into a lot of detail about how these zombie coal plants are being kept alive under the current administration, but also makes a point to go back to the cost of electricity and its not necessarily always good effects on the environment, how the steep rise in utility rates around the country, and I think he even ranks some of the states that have the lowest amount of price per kilowatt hour. And I think the Dakotas are right in there, surprisingly, even though
wind power.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of wind. You know who's got number one for wind power? Might have the lowest electric rates. You only get two guesses on this one.
I only need one. T-Bone Pickens and Texas.
Iowa.
Iowa.
I got that wrong. They generate between 60% and 70% of their electricity from wind.
Okay. Well, T-Bone Pickens was a big, big investor in the oil industry.
Yep.
And he saw the handwriting on the on the wall many years before anyone else did, and shifted his investment over to wind power in Texas.
Yeah.
And they're a bit short on transmission grid to move it around, but other than that, he made a big dent in their power supply.
Yeah, so I'm just going to quote a couple things here from the Substack from Bill McKibben, and he goes, on the more positive front, when he gets kind of outside of current U.S. energy policy, one, the obvious way forward for the U.S. was to develop more sun, wind, and batteries. We know this because it's what this country and every other country around the world had been doing for the last 2 years. More than 90% of new electric generation around the world last year came from clean energy, momentum that continued through the first quarter of this year. This was not because everyone in the energy business had gone woke. Texas, after all, installed more renewable capacity than any other state last year. It was because you could do it cheaply and quickly. We live on a planet where the cheapest way to make power is to point a sheet of glass at the sun. Now, to go to the dark side. But two, the Trump administration immediately began to do absolutely everything in its power to stop this trend and to replace it with old-fashioned energy, gas, and coal. They have rescinded environmental regulations trying to control fossil fuel pollution, ended sun and wind projects on federal land, canceled wind projects whenever they could, ended the IRA tax credits for clean energy construction, and instead added subsidies for, you guessed it, Henry, the coal industry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Up with coal.
Again, short of tasking Elon Musk to erect a large space-based shield to blot out the sun, you know, Bill does have a sense of humor. They've done literally everything possible to derail the transition to cheap, clean energy. I'm going to stop there. I had a brief chat with Kurt Malin, a professor here at the Vermont Law and Graduate School, who's been helping a lot of community projects. And he said this latest pullback of money that was going to go out to states has basically stopped in its tracks $11 million worth of projects, particularly in New Hampshire, that the Environmental Clinic at the Vermont Law and Graduate School. And those solar projects were dedicated to low-income mobile home parks, people that were making well below the average income for their state, and they've been zeroed out.
Yeah. I think that Ben Walsh plans to talk about some of these things that we just talked about.
Okay.
So when,
all right,
when he joins us with me, we'll have to let him know that we just covered that particular piece when he gets to it.
Well, we've been doing our homework, Henry. That's
yes,
good. That's part of our job here.
Yeah. And the yesterday's edition of Volts was an interview with Bill McKibben and...
Oh, really?
And the co-founder of Vermont 350, who have been working on slightly different tracks. Bill's been writing and
new book out, I believe.
Yes, a new book on basically the power of the sun and how that pointing a sheet of glass is the cheapest way to generate electricity. And remarkably, we'll find out probably in our discussion with Ben, it's also the fastest way of ramping up power generation. No other, if you want a coal plant, you're looking at 10 to 15 years to put one online. If you want natural gas, there's a waiting line for the turbines that's 10 years long. If you want to do nuclear, you're looking at probably from the small-scale modular nukes. They're nowhere close to commercialization yet. So they're at least 10 years out and probably more like 15.
Good.
Yeah, and I've thought about doing at Solarfest. I attended one of the workshops on nuclear power, and the basic problem with them, well, the very basic problem with them is they're expensive. They're not going to be a cheap source of electricity. So there's Ben. Is that you, Ben?
It is.
Hey, Ben, we got you direct online. Thanks for rejoining us. I think this is maybe your third or fourth visit to Green Scene, and we're pleased to speak with you today.
I'm glad to be back.
Yeah. So Todd discovered that he had been reading
The Substack from a recent one from Bill McKibben. So we did cover a little bit of ground, but we have a lot more to cover with you.
Sounds good.
Anyway, I'm gonna let you go where you want to go on this. We were just talking about the law school had what was it, $16 million?
It was, I think, more like $11 or $12 million in projects that they were going to help out some low income households in New Hampshire. They are also planning some projects here in Vermont, and those recent cuts from the federal administration have stopped all those projects in their tracks, and that seems to be happening a lot in a lot of places.
So maybe that's a good place for you to pick up and say, well, what's left, if anything? And I know there's pushback in the courts. You care to fill us in on things that I don't know?
Yeah, I'm happy. I think that's probably the Solar for All program. I haven't been following New Hampshire's version of that, but
yeah, I think it is. Yes.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to talk about Solar for All and where that might be headed, and sort of go from there.
Okay.
Well, you know, talking with Professor Malin here back when that project was still possible, and actually route up in Tunbridge, where Henry and I both live, at the where the town garage is, we do have a small solar array. I think it's a total of about just under 15 kilowatts that powers the four buildings that the town is in charge of. But there was room made for an additional, basically doubling that size. And Kurt at that time was saying that there are some restrictions about this group net metering that, of course, used to be a real incentive here in the state of Vermont and now has been really kind of almost zeroed out. But there was an exception made for low-income folks that could have joined on to that project or others. And I think that was pretty typical of maybe what with the Solar for All. That was probably part of that. And now in New Hampshire, these things they were planning have come to a halt. What kind of how did that Solar for All that was, I assume, under Biden and under the IRA money? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So Solar for All was a program that actually was really Bernie's idea.
Oh, good.
It was something that he had introduced and ended up getting included in the Inflation Reduction Act a few years ago now. And so states all around the country had been spooling that up. And, you know, a couple of states started to actually get solar billed and get customers signed up. Vermont was basically right on the verge of that. Vermont was awarded $63 million under the Solar for All program. It was going to help thousands, I think probably north of 10,000 Vermonters, both, you know, access something like community solar, also rooftop solar for low-income Vermonters who can make that work, you know, providing big subsidies for them, and then also to directly subsidize solar for affordable housing. So it was going to benefit a wide swath of Vermonters. Basically what happened is the Trump administration said, we're going to pull this money back. That's where we're at right now. I would argue, and I believe ultimately our attorney general will file a suit arguing that that is not a legal action by the Trump administration, that funding came to Vermont and almost every other state under the IRA and was not repealed by Congress, and therefore Trump can't unilaterally pull it back.
I had my hand up for one of those rooftop arrays, and I hadn't actually put paperwork in, but it was definitely, I think I qualified and so forth, and so you think there's a possibility that they might win in the courts? They'll probably go all the way up to the Supreme Court, and who knows what they'll do.
I do. I mean, it does very much feel like the Trump administration is just pushing an envelope is such a light way of describing it, just like blowing through every legal restraint that is supposed to be on them. And sometimes the courts do actually stop that from happening. You know, we've seen our attorney general join, I think it's 15 to 20 lawsuits against the Trump administration for a whole variety of things. And, you know, some of them have been successful. And, well, some suits have been successful. I haven't followed every one that the state has filed. And a lot of them are still tied up in court. So certainly, best case scenario, this program is really substantially delayed because of the Trump's actions. But, essentially their argument is this, you know, massive bill that the GOP just rammed through in Washington that, and we can get to this, you know, killed all the other, you know, solar and wind tax credits and a whole, you know, cut Medicaid and, you know, food assistance and all the other things. They're saying that that bill also repealed Solar for All, and that's actually not right. It said quote-unquote unobligated funds. It basically means if you haven't already, like, officially decided that a state is getting the funds, then you can pull it back. But Vermont's funds were very clearly obligated, are legally owed to the state, and that was not changed by the law that just passed. And so that's, you know, that's going to be the argument in court. I don't believe any states have filed suit yet, but I certainly expect the attorney general will ultimately file suit to keep, you know, this $63 million in Vermont for Vermonters. And then the question is, you know, what is the Scott administration going to do? There have been a couple of instances recently where the Scott administration has really undermined the attorney general's ability to defend Vermonters because they, you know, saw the, you know, the legal questions differently or had a different sort of strategic idea about how to approach things. And at least the early signs are that they actually will back up the attorney general here, which is positive. I wish that weren't in question, that, you know, our statewides were always working in concert for the best interests of Vermonters, but unfortunately that hasn't been the case 100% of the time of late.
Yeah, I think you might have been alluding, and this happened several weeks ago, when some major EV charging funding was going to be taken away by the federal administration, and a number of states, 16 or 17, joined together to block that action. And our attorney general was basically advised to not join that suit. And I know she's on record as not being too happy with that advice, and I think it came from maybe the head of the Transportation Department in Vermont.
Yeah, so what happened, yeah, that's a great synopsis of that situation. It was about $17 million in funding for electric vehicle charging that was supposed to come to the state. Very similar kind of a situation. It was, you know, funding that was passed under the Biden administration, not repealed. But the Trump administration was trying to kill it anyway. And what happened there was the attorney general did file suit, did join those other states. But the Scott administration refused to provide documentation that was, the judge ultimately decided was necessary to determine that Vermont was sufficiently harmed for the judge to include Vermont. And, you know, essentially the Scott administration said, I don't think we can prove that. But all the other states involved did, so clearly it was possible. You know, ultimately, that one looks like it may have a happy ending. The Trump administration ultimately caved, and they did issue new guidance. You know, we disagree with some of the ways that they're going to be implementing the program, but it does look like Vermont's going to have another bite at that apple, be able to get those funds in ultimately. But the concerning thing here is this is starting to be a pattern with the Scott administration. The other one I'll mention briefly, which isn't in my wheelhouse, but is certainly something that VPIRG is concerned about, is the more recent action by the Scott administration to turn over the private data of SNAP, of, you know, food assistance recipients, dating back to the pandemic, which means this is, you know, north of 100,000 Vermonters, including, you know, most or maybe all Vermonters with school-age children, to the Trump administration. And the attorney general, along with many other attorneys general, says that was not a legal request. The Scott administration disagreed and essentially never gave the attorney general a chance to defend the state. So my hope is on Solar for All, they'll be working together to make you know, the strongest possible case, but we just, you know, don't know exactly what's going to happen until it actually happens.
Didn't Scott allow the Attorney General to go along with the voter registration information or something like that? I thought he did allow something like that to be turned down.
I think you're talking about what the Secretary of State recently announced, that she would not be sharing voter data with the Trump administration. I'm not sure that, again, that's, you know, I primarily work on climate issues, so I haven't been following the minute by minute on that one. Not sure where Scott, you know, came down. You know, for us, it really is about, we're seeing the Attorney General consistently defend the state and Vermonters from the Trump administration. We're seeing the Scott administration do it sometimes and sometimes choose a different path. And that's just really concerning. And it means that, you know, we don't know if we can rely on them to defend programs like Solar for All. We hope they will. We're certainly urging them to. We're asking, you know, Vermonters to urge them to. But it's just a question mark that I wish weren't there.
Right.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I was fortunate enough to catch most of a discussion between the Secretary of State, Sarah Copeland-Hanses, and our Attorney General, Charity Clark, nearby over in Stratford. And our certainly Attorney General, when she was asked what is like her biggest achievement or what she likes to do the most, and she says, to sue the federal government when they are harming the public of Vermont. So she was very feisty in her response. So not, and I agree, and we want to get back to climate, but do you think as we look ahead, you know, Vermont's kind of rare. Our gubernatorial elections are only every 2 years, not every 4 years. And Governor Scott, very popular, been voted actually in polls as one of the most popular governors in the country. Do you think that climate, renewable energy, sustainability in next year's election, regardless of who the candidates are, and I have a pretty good suspicion as to who they are, do you think that will play a major role? Is this starting to become a big deal around the state?
I certainly think it's something that many Vermonters care deeply about. There are certainly, you know, some Vermonters where this is the, you know, one of the first issues they're thinking about when they go into the voting booth. You know, especially with the wholesale assault on, you know, the social safety net that we're seeing from the Trump administration and the GOP generally, you know, throwing 10, 15 million Americans off of their health care. You know, maybe tens of thousands of Vermonters over the next few years as well, thousands and thousands of Vermonters seeing their food assistance cut. Like, in the face of those very immediate, can I see a doctor, can I put food on the table kind of questions, I got to be honest, I think a lot of people are going to show up and be really mad about those things. And many of those people also care about climate, but it's probably not going to be the very first thing on their list when they're deciding who to vote for or what to call the governor or the delegation about.
Yeah, yeah, I got that.
So if we get back to energy issues, try and get back in your wheelhouse here. What do you see going forward? How does the state? I haven't dug into the detail of how Hydro-Québec's contract is written, and I know they have, you know, we have a long-term contract with them, but it seems to me that their water sources are drying up because of climate change. So they have less abundance than they had. And the Hydro-Québec folk, and on top of that, the demand for electricity for AI, which isn't based in Vermont, but with the new cable going down to the New York City area, the high voltage DC cable. There's going to be, I wonder whether those contracts will get reworked or whether it'll all hit us when the contracts are up. And I'm just thinking that we're, 55%, or roughly 55, I don't know if that's still the figure, of our electricity comes from Hydro-Québec, and that seems like really a lot of eggs in one basket. Seems to me that we need to diversify and generate more of our own electricity, especially with the cost of solar and grid storage being much, much cheaper than it was a year ago and 2 years ago. Downward, steep downward climb on that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The numbers on Hydro-Québec aren't quite that high, but it's still safe to say the single largest chunk of the electricity that we're using is coming from contracts with Hydro-Québec. And you're absolutely right for a number of reasons, including they sort of need more of their own electricity as, you know, everywhere is electrifying. They certainly are, you know, seeing massive adoption of electric vehicles. I don't know if there are data centers being built up there, but I got to imagine if they aren't now, they're going to be soon. You know, so they need more of their own electricity. And as you said, there are transmission projects underway that are going to broaden the market for Hydro-Québec power. Now, does that mean Vermont doesn't get any power in the 2030s when our current contracts expire? No, I would be very surprised if that were the case. You know, we have a decades-long relationship, or utilities do, and the state of Vermont to some extent, with Hydro-Québec. So that'll be in the mix still, I'm quite sure. We absolutely have to, you know, look at other regional resources. That's the way our renewable energy standard is built. It expects that some of our power will be coming from regional new renewables. Now, you know, Trump administration is slowing down things like offshore wind, but there's an incredibly good offshore wind resource, you know, off the coast of New England, and that's a, you know, very mature technology in other parts of the world that's just really getting underway here in the United States. But, you know, wind is very steady off the coast. It, you know, blows harder in the winter than in the summer. And so it's a very good resource that can complement other resources that we can build here, like onshore wind potentially in the future, and certainly solar. And so we really got to be looking at that mix of renewable resources. And, you know, I want to underscore what you said about solar and storage. You know, I think many people have this sense that those are still sort of like nice supplemental resources that can kind of help a little bit in the afternoon. Maybe, you know, maybe some people have like a battery backup and, you know, they don't need to worry about power outages as much as the rest of us. But it's sort of a niche thing that isn't really changing much. And that's really a story that's, you know, grounded in facts from 5 or 10 years ago. You know, the cost of a solar plus storage system dropped about 20% year over year between, I think it was 23 and 2024. And, you know, more and more we're seeing those systems compete with, you know, new gas plants, for instance, when you're thinking about, like, what are the new types of electricity might be built. And so, you know, if not now necessarily in New England, in the next few years, certainly in the next decade, we're going to see those kinds of systems be as cheaper than the, you know, the systems they'd be replacing or competing with. So I think we've got a responsibility to do everything we can to get more new renewables built here in Vermont and to, you know, diversify our you know, mix of renewables and look to things like offshore wind as well to, you know, fill in some of the gap that might be created by smaller HQ contracts, like you said.
Yeah, let's stay with wind just for a moment. And we know up until recently that, well, actually, it goes back a few years, that there were some turbines put in, particularly up in the Northeast Kingdom and a few other spots around. But there's been a lot of resistance. And you have mentioned, you know, the success of certain offshore wind projects and how the U.S. is trailing some other countries around the world. Do you think that homegrown energy here within the boundaries of the state really should not necessarily count wind as part of that? I mean, we can get wind power from offshore, that we should be leaning more towards solar because it's really has been wind in particular has been a contentious issue here in Vermont.
It has. I mean, it's something that people, aren't used to seeing. Change is hard and sort of jarring at times. I'll say, personally, I love seeing them. I can't see any from my house in Winooski, but, when we are in other parts of the state, when we're up at the Causeway, you can see the ones on Georgia Mountain. And it really, to me, represents a very hopeful picture. Mm. And a lot of the claims that have been put out there by folks who just don't want to see any of them in Vermont have been debunked. They're really, there aren't health impacts of them when they're built responsibly as they have been here. So anyway, to get to your sort of underlying question, I absolutely think that wind should be part of the solution here, that there's, more wind resource than we've, currently taken advantage of. And the other thing that's really important to understand is it's a very good complement to solar. You think about when the wind blows harder, it's oftentimes when it's not sunny. Obviously, there's wind at night when you don't have solar. So while battery storage is coming down dramatically in cost, you still don't want to have to build more of that than is necessary. And so having a variety of resources, including ones we already have, like, hydro, for instance, small hydro that's in the state, that's a resource that is going to peak in the spring, right? Whereas you might see wind peak in the summer and solar peak, sorry, wind peak in the winter and solar peak in the summer. And so you have this mix of resources in state and out, and you have energy storage. And then you're talking about a picture that really can provide with an entirely renewable grid, obviously not right now, but in the future, a very reliable, robust electric system for Vermonters. And that's just much, much harder to do as you take more and more potential renewable resources off the table.
I look at it from, I've been looking at solar and renewable energy for my own use. I've moved to an electric car, so I have that as an additional load. And I would consider doing heat pumps. I'm currently using a very high efficiency wood stove, but it's still that black carbon that's emitted is a very strong greenhouse gas or a very strong, not really a greenhouse gas, but a way of capturing heat in the lower mm-hmm. atmosphere. And penciling out for myself on paper, the major problem is what do you do with November and December, when we're very limited on solar production, and I couldn't put enough battery storage. It wouldn't be cost effective to put enough battery storage in at my house for running heat pumps during that period. So how do you balance that? If there were, I realize that grid storage batteries are much cheaper than a battery I'd put in my house, a lithium battery, and also I guess I'm wondering whether wind, whether it's offshore wind or whether it is in-state wind, whether those things would help balance that. Or I know the wind is better at night and during the wintertime, but does it spill over into that November-December period?
Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you the particular wind resource in Vermont in November and December versus other months. I guess what I would say is that the broad description that I gave of, a balanced grid, that's certainly true, right? Obviously, if sure. you're if you have wind available in those months, it's going to be a easier to balance grid than if you sort of take it out of the mix. The other thing I'd say in that just heating space that you brought up, air source heat pumps are fantastic. I recently moved, so we haven't installed them in the new place yet, but we had them for years at my old house, along with a wood stove. It provided most of our heating needs. And that's something that can provide real benefit to Vermonters. They need, when you install one of those systems, you need to make sure you know how to operate it. So you're really you know, using it in the winter, using it efficiently, that's worth looking into if you're installing one. But there's other technologies that are sort of up and coming that are really exciting that I don't think we need to wait for, but are going to improve the situation as we see more and more electric heating. You know, things like, you know, geothermal, that's something that's been around for a long time. I don't mean like the geothermal electric like that you see out west, but just a ground source heat pump that's taking heat out of the ground instead of out of the air. You know, there are companies working on scaling that and reducing the costs. You also have systems that are sort of networked geothermal or, you know, thermal energy networks that are drawing on waste heat, you know, even from, you know, industrial processes or refrigeration, that where you can heat a few buildings. That's even more efficient than cold climate heat pumps, which are, again, way more efficient than burning something for heat. And then you have just, you know, one more example of something that is just starting to get installed here but could make a real difference over time. Systems that will actually, you know, have an air source heat pump that's heating up a large water tank in your home, and then you can store that heat for the nighttime. So you can use the heat pump during the day when it's warmer out, or at least less cold, and there's plenty of sunshine to power solar on your roof and everywhere else in the state. And then, you know, store that heat for the nighttime when there's less renewable resource available and it's colder out. And then you're able to both shift the load and improve the efficiency because you're, you know, mostly using the heat pump and times of the day a little bit warmer. So I guess the overall picture is we're in a really good place right now with the technologies that are available and how much cheaper they're getting, and that's only improving. There's more technologies coming online, and most of these things, especially on the generation and storage side, are getting so much cheaper year over year that, to me, you know, even with Trump trying to slam the brakes on this transition, I'm very optimistic. Like, I do think he's going to be able to slow it down, and the pace is incredibly important, but it is happening. It is not going to be stopped by the GOP, and my hope is here in Vermont and at the federal level, we'll see, you know, future administrations hit the accelerator again as we hopefully exit a Trump administration and GOP control down there.
Yeah. Do you have an ask of listeners? Is there anything that's on your front burner that you would like people to weigh in on, or do we have to kind of wait for that to develop a little bit?
Right. You are with VPIRG, Public Interest. What is out there in the public interest that you'd like to hear about?
Well, I would say, let me say one thing specifically that sort of speaks to some of what we talked about. And then let me go a little bit broader and tell you just a teeny bit about what we've been working on this summer as we've been knocking on doors. And let me just ask, how much time do I have?
Probably, you know, we've got a little stuff we want to put in. Another 3 or 4 minutes, Ben.
Okay, great, great. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't like on the 30-second timeline. So in terms of, you know, energy and what we've been talking about, if folks are so inclined, giving the governor's office a call, I think the number is 828-3333, and saying essentially, please support the attorney general if and when she ever tries to defend Vermonters from the Trump administration, because again, that has not been happening universally from the Scott administration, and it really should be. He needs to get her back as she's protecting Vermonters. And then the broader thing that I would say, you know, we've been knocking on doors all summer. We have 50, 60 young people, you know, going out. We've actually, and I don't think we've told anyone in the media this, so it's sort of breaking news. We knocked on doors in all the municipalities in the state of Vermont, all 252. And it's been incredible response. And our message has basically been, we need to band together to protect democracy. This is a moment in our nation's history where we're really at an inflection point. And Vermont can't solve that problem by itself, but you better believe if places like Vermont try to sit on the sidelines and think, oh, it'll be okay here, that things are going to go bad, that we need to be a part of this. And a lot of the people we talk to, they are on board and they've been showing up at the rallies and they've been doing the things. And other people are feeling despondent or like they don't have enough power or their voice doesn't matter. And so we're so grateful to be able to find these people and sort of try to welcome them into this movement. And the second ask then is, be a part of this moment, be a part of this movement. If you don't like the direction the country's going, show up to the next rally in your town, the next vigil. There's so many of these things going on all across the state. It's just a couple clicks away on social media. If you follow VPIRG, we will certainly keep you in the loop on our social media and our email list. One voice by itself isn't going to solve this problem, but when the tens of millions of people around the country that understand the direction we're heading is unacceptable band together, we really can change things, and that's been shown around the world time and time again. So be a part of this movement. That's the ask.
All right, a big ask, and I'll just tack on, since it's on my mind, that locally here, a group that, just like a lot of the groups around the country that are sticking up, resisting what's happening, trying to make our communities more resilient, is BAIL. And you can see their regular meetings that they're having on so many issues, whether it's the climate, whether it's democracy, whether it's healthcare, whether it's immigration, at BAILVT.org. And great to hear about how you got your canvassers to hit all 252 towns, Ben. That's amazing.
I had a lovely canvasser who came to my door and was very excited to find someone that was actually ready to blow the trumpet on the air. So that's part of how I thought to call you.
That's fantastic. Well, we love to hear that. And yeah, it really has been a remarkable summer. You know, so many thousands of Vermonters, you know, saying that they're in. And it just feels really good to be in this moment, being able to actually make a difference, do something about it.
So my canvasser had been up in the Northeast Kingdom and had been in Trump territory. And she said there were ever so many people who said, you know, we wanted a disruptor, but we didn't want this. She was very heartened by the positive feedback she got for standing up for democracy.
Yeah, that's fantastic to hear. And, you know, I think that's what we're seeing in Vermont. Certainly it's been VPIRG's experience out there. And, you know, you're just seeing so many stories around the country of people who are saying very similar things. Like, I didn't realize what I was signing up for, you know, having buyer's remorse with this administration. So that definitely gives me some hope. And, you know, that some of those people are actually sort of standing up and saying that, and not just sort of quietly being frustrated, you know, in their own home.
Well, as usual, Ben, you've given us hope here at Green Zine, and hopefully to our listeners as well, and really appreciate you joining us again.
It's always a pleasure.
Yes. All right. And if you have any information on those, water storage heat pumps, which I've only seen the kind of ones that are intended for domestic hot water, but I'm thinking that there's space for that, and maybe they're CO2 driven as well.
I'll send you a little bit more information.
I would love some information on that, and we'll look up someone and get them on the air and get them to talk about it.
That sounds great.
All right, Ben. Hey, have a great day, and thanks again.
You too.
Bye. All right, Henry. That's nice talk, and pretty positive there in these somewhat darker times. Although the sun has come out, we're really a mostly sunny day. So if you have a battery or you're getting some power from a larger solar array, it's a good day for that. You know, I'm going to quote Bob Marley here, just in that
All
activism
right.
part. People need to get up. Stand up for their rights. And I think that's a lot of what a lot of the nonprofits and a lot of the communities are doing around here. And as Ben says, even though we're a small state, that doesn't mean that we can't make our voices heard. And I think I've got that phone number memorized, 828-3333.
Right.
Can I talk to the governor, please? Well, or at least leave a message for him.
Excellent. I'll put that in the show notes so that... So that
you could put that phone number right underneath the radio station's number, which is 802-763-2700. We should have a future show where we round up some regular listeners to join us and talk about their environmental concerns. On the good news front, Henry, outside here we have 8 refurbished, because it's a different company. Actually, they look totally different, but they're in the same place. 8 EV chargers, level two, which once you get the app, I won't bother to give out the business name because they keep changing. It's not just for people that work at the law school or live here in South Royalton. It's for the general public. And they are clocking in at like 17 miles of gain per hour of charging. So if you were to come to South Royalton to do some shopping, go to a meeting, go to something at the law school, a film, et cetera, and you were here for, let's say, 3 hours, you'd pick up 50 miles. And I certainly appreciate the Vermont Law and Graduate School that's picking up the tab for that. So basically subsidized EV charging here on the campus of Vermont Law and Graduate School. And Ben was saying that he thinks that Solar for All may come back after the litigation is over and also maybe claw back some of that money that was going to go to increased high-speed EV charging throughout the state.
Yeah, that would be nice to have a few more spots, and especially, you know, there are some, just a few high-speed chargers. There's one up in Essex, Vermont, that Green Mountain Power runs, where you're paying a very low price, or I think that one's actually free. That's a high-speed charger.
Ooh.
So it'd be nice to have a lot of the high-speed chargers are very expensive
very
to install.
Very expensive. Northward of $100,000.
And so that means that they have to get their money back if it's as a business, and they have to charge extra for the electricity. Still comes out cheaper than gas, but it does make electricity more expensive if you're charging at a high-speed charger. And charging at home is always, even on a little line, works fine as long as you can be plugged in most of the time. Anyway, it'll be nice to have more high-speed chargers paid for, because it'll reduce the price for the recharging and make people who are traveling feel more comfortable about visiting the area.
Yeah. Hey, I want to touch base just once again, regardless of whether we can get Bill McKibben in next week or in the future. And this is from his recent piece, and back to prices of electricity. So the average Iowan, to go back to electric rates, will spend 39% less on their electric bills than the average American, because they produce 50% of their state's electricity from wind, the second biggest wind state in the country. I think you're right about Texas being number one there. The same thing is true across the country. He quotes, or at least alludes, to Stanford professor Mark Jacobson explaining the math in the Wall Street Journal. How do the 12 highly renewable states rank in terms of electricity prices? 10 of them are among the 19 states with the lowest electricity prices. 7 are among the 10 states with the lowest prices. South Dakota, with renewables supplying 95% of the demand, has the 9th lowest electricity price. North Dakota has 52% renewables, has the lowest. More renewables mean lower prices. That's a nice equation there.
I like that. That's simple to remember.
Very
that
simple.
Equation.
And everybody has to pay the bill somewhere down the line. All right, we're down to about just over a minute, Henry. I'm going to let you have the last word in just a second. I do want to squeeze in mentioning our very generous underwriters. Some of them have just renewed, and we have some new ones probably coming in. I mentioned Bail earlier. Check out their website at bailvt.org. The moving solar company, in other words, they have tracking solar panels, Solaflex down in Norwich. Tom Wells, ongoing support from him. Daniel Leibowitz, the Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company, Solarfest, Wit and Grit, and the Yes We Can Collective. I've left you 43 seconds, Henry.
Okay. Well, on the website, on our notes down at the bottom of the main page, I have a list of the heat-trapping gases to put in comparison with CO2. And that includes methane and nitrous oxide and fluorinated gases. And I'm working on an article to talk about the grand overview. And there is a link to a methane website that tracks where people are leaking methane.
Okay, great. Thanks for joining us here on Green Zine, WFBR LP, South Royalty.